Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the market research company Nielsen reports that Vietnam has one of the world's highest rates of consumer savings. But observers disagree on whether it is a good sign. 69% of Vietnamese surveyed said they put extra money into savings. That compares with 66% of people in China and 62% in Indonesia. As a developing nation, Vietnam is becoming increasingly wealthy. The country's citizens are saving more, just as many people in countries around the world. But observers, such as Binky Chadha of Deutsche Bank and former U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Ben S. Bernanke, worry there is a surplus of savings in the world economy. They say that can misrepresent the larger investment environment and lead to negative interest rates. Negative interest rates mean people would have to pay to keep their savings in a bank. In the U.S., surplus savings have pushed the stock market to record highs. Experts say the market is nearing a bubble. A bubble happens when there is a sudden increase in price over a short time period that is not supported by the value of a product. In Vietnam, the extra savings has also led to an asset bubble, especially in the housing market. Vietnam's economy is growing quickly, but experts disagree on how to explain the wealth that is being created. Researchers at the company Oxford Analytica say there may not be enough productive investments available. Savers are investing in luxury real estate that is feeding a bubble. But Nielsen Vietnam says being able to save so much money is a good sign from consumers. Louise Hawley is managing director at Nielsen Vietnam. She told VOA that as more and more people feel more certain about their future, they are saving more rather than spending today. However, the high savings rate could also mean people worry they will need the money for retirement. This means Vietnam is part of a global trend identified by Chadha. He noted that savings rates are going up even though interest rates are going down. He says people are not saving money to earn interest. Instead, Chadha sees this as a sign that people are saving because they fear they will not have enough money in the future. Vietnam's savings rate is not uncommon. Bernanke argued that Asia, especially China, has earned so much from exports that the money has aided a worldwide savings surplus. Recently, Vietnam has also become one of the developing Asian nations with high exports and a surplus. Like China, Vietnam uses its surplus to buy U.S. Treasury bonds. The high demand for U.S. bonds is also a reason the U.S. does not have to pay a lot of interest on its bonds. This helps to lower interest rates. Vietnam also uses its surplus to buy a lot of foreign money, mostly U.S. dollars. The U.S. Treasury complained in a report this month that this helps increase the value of U.S. dollars and lower the value of the Vietnamese currency. Vietnam's exports seem even cheaper at a time when the Trump administration wants U.S. consumers to buy fewer Vietnamese products. Still, Hawley said there is reason for hope in Vietnam. Her company's December survey showed Vietnam has one of the world's highest levels of consumer confidence, just after India and the Philippines.
Astronauts aboard the International Space Station recently tested an oven they used to bake 5 chocolate chip cookies. We now know the results of that experiment. The cookies took a lot longer to bake in space than on Earth. The cookies that came out best required 2 hours of baking time inside the International Space Station. The baking time for cookies on Earth is generally only about 20 minutes. The cookies returned to Earth earlier this month aboard a SpaceX-built spacecraft that splashed down in the Pacific Ocean. The cookies are the first food baked in space from raw food materials. They remain frozen in a laboratory in Houston, Texas. The American company NanoRax designed and built the cookie oven. Hilton DoubleTree Hotels supplied the cookie dough. The makers of the oven did expect some difference in the baking time in space, but they were surprised that that difference was so large. There's still a lot to look into to figure out really what's driving that difference, but definitely a cool result, said Mary Murphy. She is with the company NanoRax, which is based in Texas. Murphy said the baking results will continue to be examined in order to better understand why space baking took so much longer. In addition, researchers will study the effectiveness of the baking tray, which was designed to work in microgravity conditions. The 5 chocolate chip cookies were frozen when they were sent to space. Each had to be baked separately in the oven. Italian astronaut Luca Parmitano took charge of the baking experiment in December. He reported that the first cookie stayed in the oven for 25 minutes at 149 degrees Celsius. When it came out of the oven, it was seriously underbaked. For the next 2 cookies, Parmitano more than doubled the baking time. Those cookies came out better, but were still underbaked. The 4th cookie stayed in the oven for 2 hours, after which Parmitano was able to report success. I can't tell you whether it's cooked all the way or not, but it certainly doesn't look like cookie dough anymore, he reported to controllers back on Earth. For the fifth cookie, Parmitano turned the oven temperature up to 163 degrees Celsius and baked it for 130 minutes. This time, he reported the best baking results. No one has tasted the space-traveling cookies just yet. Organizers of the experiment say additional testing will need to be carried out to determine whether they are safe to eat. I'm Brian Lynn.
Everyone, thanks for listening to Everyday Grammar. If you listen often and find the material easy to understand, you probably have been practicing English for a long time. That's great. It means you have made a lot of progress since you first began. But maybe there are a few things you'd still like to work on. So, I've got a question for you. What are you willing to do to improve your English? The idea of being willing to do something is the subject of today's Everyday Grammar program. Native English speakers use the phrase often, so you'll hear and see it everywhere. The phrase be willing to gets its meaning from the adjective willing. The adjective willing means to be ready, eager, or prepared to do something. Note that being willing to do something is not the same as wanting to do it. The idea is just that you don't need to be persuaded. Listen again to my earlier question. What are you willing to do to improve your English? In other words, what are you ready or prepared to do to get better in English? Now let's talk about how to form sentences with be willing to. The structure of the phrase is be plus willing plus infinitive verb. You probably remember that the infinitive form of verbs is to plus the simple form. So, in my question about improving English, I use the infinitive to do. As for the main verb, I used are in the example. As you know, are is the present form of be. The be verb can also change tenses. For example,
your English is really good. I can see you were willing to work hard to improve it.
Or,
he was willing to stay late to finish the job.
Notice the suggestion of a cost in those two examples. Being willing to do something often means making an investment or sacrifice. Improving your English requires effort and time. And the person who stayed late to finish the job probably sacrificed his plans for the evening. It makes sense, then, that the phrase be willing to can also take a negative form to show someone does not agree to make an investment or sacrifice.
He wasn't willing to stay late to finish the job. His family was expecting him for dinner.
We also sometimes add a condition to say that someone is willing only if something else happens. Here's what a person might say.
The couple is willing to buy the car if the owner makes some repairs.
In this statement, the condition is repairs on the vehicle. Someone might also be willing to do something if it helps others or a greater purpose. Imagine you are working on a creative video project with a coworker. You are the main video creator. When your partner sees what you have made, he says this.
I like your video, but it is too long for our show. Are you willing to cut the ending?
You say yes, even though you like the ending. Later, your coworker says, are you willing to show Sam how to use the video software? Today is his first day. You say yes again, even though you are really, really busy. But welcoming a new coworker is more important. In these examples, being willing means you are able to accept something. The meaning has to do with valuing cooperation. Well, that's all for today. I'll end with the same question I started with. What are you willing to do to improve your English? I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. A new leader stood before the American people on March 4th, 1913. He was Woodrow Wilson, the 28th President of the United States. Wilson belonged to the Democratic Party. He was progressive in his belief that government should take an active part in efforts for social reforms. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe begin the story of Wilson's presidency.
Woodrow Wilson had spent most of his life at Princeton University. First, he was a professor. Then, he was university president. Next, Wilson was elected governor of the state of New Jersey. His early success as governor made him a leading candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1912. Wilson traveled widely around the country during the campaign. He made speeches to many groups. He tried to make himself and his ideas known to as many Americans as possible.
Wilson called his program the New Freedom. One of his campaign promises was to fight for better conditions for America's small business owners. Such proposals helped him win the Democratic nomination for president. Then he defeated President William Howard Taft and former President Theodore Roosevelt in the election. Woodrow Wilson, the former president of a university, had become the president of a nation. The largest crowd in Washington, D.C.'s history welcomed Wilson outside the Capitol building on the day of his inauguration. He called on the American people to join him in making the country a better place. Our duty, Wilson said, is to correct the evil without hurting the good. I call all honest men, all patriotic, all forward-looking men to my side.
Wilson wasted no time. He immediately called a special session of Congress to act on Democratic campaign promises to reduce import taxes or tariffs. Wilson felt strongly about the need to reform these taxes. He broke tradition by leaving the White House to appear before Congress in person to appeal for his tariff proposals. Many members of Congress opposed Wilson's plans, but the new president used the results of a Senate investigation to win the fight. The investigation showed that a number of senators owned companies that depended on high tariffs for their profits. The votes of these senators were influenced by their property holdings. Public knowledge of the situation forced many of them to give up their holdings and stop resisting tariff reform. Congress finally approved Wilson's proposals.
Lower tariffs reduced the amount of money taken in by the federal government. So the Senate also approved a tax on income or earnings. A constitutional amendment had been passed earlier to permit such a tax. President Wilson and the Democratic Party were pleased with the new tariff and income tax bills, but they were far from finished. Next, they turned their efforts to reform of the banking industry. For several years, many people had recognized the need for changes in the banking system. The old system of uncontrolled private banks had developed years earlier, before the United States became a major industrial nation. Many people agreed that a more modern system was needed, but they could not agree on details.
President Wilson said control of the nation's wealth was held by too few men. He noted a report that said just two men controlled 10% of the total wealth of the United States. Wilson said the nation needed a money supply that could be increased or reduced when necessary to correct economic conditions. He said a method was needed to let banks help each other during economic emergencies. And, he said, laws were needed to prevent a few wealthy men from using the economic resources of the country for their own purposes. Finally, Wilson said the control of this system of banking must be public, not private. It must belong to the government itself.
Wilson called his proposal for a central bank the Federal Reserve System. Under the plan, the nation would be divided into 12 areas. Each area would have its own Federal Reserve Bank. These area banks would not do business with the public. They would serve only as bankers' banks. And they would issue a new form of money supported by the federal government. Most important, the leaders of the new system would be chosen by the government, not by private business.
Bankers, business leaders, and their representatives in Congress sharply criticized President Wilson's proposals. They said government control of the banking system was socialism, not capitalism. But Wilson refused to change his proposals, and he helped to lead the fight to make them law. Finally, Congress agreed. It did not take long for bankers to discover that the new system was much better than the old one. Today, The Federal Reserve System is one of the most important institutions in the United States.
For Woodrow Wilson, the fight over the banking system was yet another political success. He had won major reforms in the nation's tariffs, taxes, and banking systems. Now, he told Congress, that new legislation was needed to control the power of monopolies and trusts. These were the giant companies and business alliances that controlled complete industries. Wilson proposed a new antitrust law to control the actions of large companies. His supporters in Congress wrote a bill that listed a number of business activities that no longer would be permitted. For example, no longer could a company set prices that would reduce competition or create a monopoly. No longer could corporations buy stocks of competing companies. No longer could they demand that a store refuse to sell competing products. The new bill also protected labor unions from being charged with antitrust violations. It gave unions more power to organize and protect workers.
At President Wilson's request, Congress also prepared a law that set up a government agency called the Federal Trade Commission. The commission was given the job of investigating wrongdoing in business. It had the power to force companies to obey the new antitrust laws and other rules. Both the antitrust law and the Federal Trade Commission helped protect small business owners from the power of business giants. Once again, the proposals caused fierce debate. But once again, Congress finally voted to give Wilson most of what he wanted.
The early months of Wilson's term were one of the most successful times in the history of any president. The new president had won the election by promising major reforms in the economic life of the country. And he had kept that promise. The reforms were not only a victory for Woodrow Wilson, they also changed the face of American business and economics for many years to come. The income tax, for example, grew to become the federal government's main source of money.
Woodrow Wilson had taught history in the days when he was a professor at Princeton University. He knew his actions as president could influence the country for a long time. But as a historian, he also knew his own term in the White House could be changed by unexpected events. That is just what happened. Wilson campaigned for president mainly on national issues, but he soon was forced to spend more and more time on international issues. His first big problem was across the United States southern border in Mexico.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.